episode 103, July 27th, 2012, Gigabit Mumble Recognition. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective, the end user. It's the tech news that you can use. I'm your host and producer, Taylor Marr. Chris Barnes is out this week. He's taken a vow of silence until he either gets gigabit Ethernet or Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8. Joining me today is our friend from the Digital Media Zone, Josh Pollard. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well, but does that mean that I'm going to be doing this alongside of you for like the next 2 months?
Definitely. Did Chris not tell you that? Oh, how could he have?
Oh, geez. No, well, without gigabit internet, how could he have told me? I mean, if he's stuck on that slot.
Well, especially if he had taken a vow of silence, that would make things especially difficult.
That would also, yeah, I guess I could.
But if Chris wants to get gigabit Ethernet anytime soon, he'll have to move to Kansas City because Google has officially launched their gigabit Ethernet service in Kansas City, Kansas and Missouri. So it's going to be $300 for the installation, $70 a month, or you can go ahead and tie it in with their Google Fiber TV service, which, well, you don't have most of the major networks participating, but you can record 8 TV shows at once. Josh, what do you think about this Google Fiber service?
Well, of course, the speeds are incredible. I mean, having 1,000 megs up and down would be great. The Google TV service at first sounded awesome until we started to hear more of the details. There are plenty of channels, but when you don't get CNN or HBO or ESPN or AMC or TNT or Fox News and Fox Sports, and you know, these are a lot of big time channels that everyone watches, and they don't have any of them. So I'm not so sure about this one.
It's true. I feel like there are a couple of big conglomerate networks that own many channels and also not a few cable companies that are declining to participate in Google's next generation TV app, which it isn't really TV and it isn't really an app. It's just sort of Google's framework for sending you TV over the internet.
Right. And it sounds like there are a lot of things about this that sound great, like being able to record 8 programs at a time and storing 500 hours of HD video. That's great. And, you know, that's more than just sending you content, of course. But this seems a lot like when they launched Google TV, like a whole lot of potential, but not very much to actually deliver.
Yeah, I see where you're going with that. I have to imagine for Google, you know, off becoming a cable provider, that's a distant second to their idea of offering a gigabit up and down at affordable prices directly to the home. What would you even do with a gigabit per second? I mean, it's so fast. It's mind-boggling. I mean, you could download the new OS X Mountain Lion in less than a minute.
I don't know. It almost seems wasted. I could see having, like, honestly, to me, anything more than like 25 megs down seems unnecessary.
Well,
like, it'd be nice.
We'll get into that.
But it seems unnecessary
a little bit more later. But I have to imagine that Google is just, you know, blowing the roof off of the house and just trying to get people to sort of figure out what they can do with just unlimited internet speeds.
Yeah.
Because no one really knows yet.
Nope.
Okay, so that's just launching today. If you're in Kansas City, great news for you, especially if you don't care too much about getting all the cable networks, because you're not going to get most of the good ones. But we've got a whole bunch of other Google news from this week, starting with a couple of search additions, you know, Google's bread and butter. The first thing is that they're adding in a service called Google Handwrite. So you're allowed to now on their mobile search scrawl in your own handwriting, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to search for. This seems really silly to me. This makes even less sense than Google trying to be a cable provider.
Well, it seems like, you know, they've got these touch-enabled devices, and we're seeing people getting a lot more interested in handwriting on these touch-enabled devices, but it doesn't work very well. But Google's still trying to do it anyways. You know, even in the screenshots, you see these people writing with the tip of their finger, so they have to write really big. So it's like you get one word and you fill up the whole screen.
I feel like this is like 1995 all over again. You know, this is the original Palm Pilot. This is the Apple Newton. We tried this stuff. It didn't work. We moved on. We found something better. We don't need handwriting anymore.
Well, see, that I guess that's where I disagree with you, because I do really like handwriting. I've got a Windows tablet that has a pen, you know, an active digitizer in it, and it works really well. But it's a pen, you know, it's a lot smaller than the tip of my finger. So I can write in a size of letters that actually makes sense, instead of like I'm picking up a 3-year-old's crayon to color with, you know? So, yeah, I think that this is kind of pointless. I think we would probably be faster and more accurate with our on-screen keyboards than using the tip of our finger.
Okay. Well, maybe they're aiming at Galaxy Note people. You know, supposedly there's a Galaxy Note tablet coming out.
Oh, that would work.
Right. All right. But their other new search feature, I think, is way cooler. They are integrating a scientific calculator, 34 functions, into both desktop and mobile search. Even better, you can use the scientific calculator functions with your voice. So I think that's pretty cool. A lot of people are already using Google as calculators, and they're just making that way easier.
This is a really cool, I agree with you. This is better than the handwriting thing by far. It's a nice calculator. I played with it on my phone. The voice activation would be great, but that's limited to desktop search. So whereas typically I think of using voice activation things with my phone, because if I'm at my desk, I might be at work, and I definitely don't want to talk to my computer when I'm at work where other people can hear me.
Yeah, that's true. They should develop some sort of like mutter feature, you know, where you can talk really quietly near your computer, and they'll have special algorithms to pick it up so no one near you can work can hear you.
That's maybe not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But Mutter. I would bet that Google Mutter.
I'm going to patent it. I'm going to copyright it.
You might not be able to copyright the Google part of that, but I would bet that they'll make maybe an Android app for this that would allow you to do it with voice search, though. So that would probably make more sense. But either way, even if you just need to type out on a graphing calculator, this is a pretty nice little feature to add to Google.
True, absolutely. And I don't know if Apple famously built their scientific calculator into the iPhone just by turning it sideways. All of a sudden, the calculator doubles, and there it is. I don't know if Android has anything like that. Maybe the chat room can speak up. Do you have anything on that like that on Windows Phone?
You know, I don't know. I don't need a graphing calculator very often.
Well, so scientific calculator, not graphing calculator.
Or yeah, sorry, scientific.
Although there's an app for that too.
I'm sure there is, but I don't really need either of them all that often, so I've never even looked for a scientific calculator app for Windows Phone, but I'm sure there has to be one, but maybe not one quite as spiffy as yours, where you just turn the phone sideways and it turns into a scientific calculator.
Chris Barnes is flirting with his vow of silence. He's writing in the chat room that Android and Windows phones both have that iPhone scientific calculator sideways feature.
Oh, is it breaking a vow of silence if he's typing?
Well, I don't know. It all seems pretty fishy to me, but obviously he's not speaking, but I think he should remain more silent than he is.
You know, I can confirm what he just said. I just pulled out my Lumia 900 and turned it sideways, and sure enough, it turned into a scientific calculator.
There you go. All right, we're going to keep talking about Google for the rest of the top news, but because I'm calling the shots here, we're going to talk about Google and Apple for a little while. So if you are a connoisseur of Mac and iOS email apps, you have certainly heard of, if not tried out, Sparrow, which is a native Mac and iOS email app designed for Gmail, and quite frankly, it's awesome and beautiful. It works really well. But the makers of Sparrow have been bought out by Google. And so for Sparrow users, this is probably sort of a sad thing. They've announced that they're already not going to release any new features for their Sparrow apps, and they were working on an iPad app, but I guess that that may not come to fruition ever. But great news for Gmail users, because obviously Google has some strong things planned for the future of their Gmail design interface. And maybe even some first-party native apps. I don't know. Josh, do you use Gmail?
I do use Gmail heavily, but I don't own any Apple devices, so I've heard of Sparrow's sort of torrid history with these Apple devices. Hasn't it always been a little tough to use because you couldn't make it like the default email client on an iPhone?
With iOS on the iPhone, it was a challenge because they didn't have notifications built in.
Ah, I see.
But in every other aspect, it could pretty much be the default client.
So what are the great features in Sparrow that you think will make Gmail on the web a better experience?
That's really tough to say. I don't know Sparrow well enough. And there are so many different applications. But I think really, the obvious move to me is that Gmail could come out with native desktop apps.
That would be different for them.
Yeah, but it's it's what Sparrow's good at, and I think there's no reason that we wouldn't see a native Windows app as well as a Mac app coming from Google.
Hopefully a Metro-style app for Windows 8.
Probably, but I don't know what their plans are. So bad news for current Sparrow users, but great news for future Gmail users, of which all current Sparrow users are. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see where this thing goes. It could be mobile, it could be web, it could be native desktop, it could be PC, it could be Mac, I don't know. But one more Google Plus Mac story. When Apple announced iOS 6, they basically said that they were dropping Google Maps and Google Earth, but Google also that same week committed to bringing new features to iOS. And even before Apple dropped Google Maps, they've already brought 3D imagery into Google Earth. And I had a chance to play with this today, and it looks really fantastic. They have that same flyover feature that Apple is promising for sometime in the fall, and virtual tours and stuff. And I'll point out even that as an owner of an iPhone 4, I'm not even going to get Apple's flyover, but Google's Google Earth flyover worked just fine.
So Google filling in the gaps where Apple wouldn't.
When Apple shuns Google, yeah, they're still committed to it.
Well, I suppose there is money to be made for Google.
Right? Somehow, I mean, there's no ads and not a lot of personal information coming directly from this Google Earth app for iPad and iPhone 4.
Or so you think.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. They're always good at getting more information out of us than we think they're getting. That's absolutely true, which some of it you can go and see what they have gotten out of you. But I don't know. If you have an iPhone 4 or 4S, go ahead and grab the latest version of Google Earth and play around with it, or don't. It's really no sweat off my back. But it is time to turn on the afterburners. So, Josh, put on your seatbelt. Make sure everything's strapped down. You do not want loose items around you during this.
Okay, I'll make sure to hold on to my drink tightly.
So we've already talked about gigabit Ethernet tonight, so this will be a little bit lackluster. Comcast trying to compete with Verizon's Fios Ethernet, which just topped out at 300 megabits per second. Comcast decided to offer 305. And keep in mind that is cable, not fiber. So that's a pretty impressive number to pull out of some coax cables. But still, nothing quite close to Google's gigabit Ethernet. And also keep in mind, we reported last week that Verizon's Fios offers an average of 120% of their advertised internet speeds, whereas Comcast averages just 100 or maybe 101. So you still might even get faster internet on Fios than you would on Comcast. But if you have Comcast and you're stuck with Comcast, which I was for many years, and you're dying for the latest and greatest fastest speeds, actually I think it's only available in the Northeast for now, but you can get up to 305 megabits upload, and what's the downlink on here? 65.
That's a lot of bandwidth. And if you're looking for more ways to use all of that bandwidth, well, Verizon and Redbox have started testing their new online video streaming service.
Yeah, true, except that's only for Fios customers.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, who also have an excess of bandwidth.
Right, although not as much excess as those Comcast.
So this is a partnership between Verizon and Redbox, and they're trying to offer a first-party competition to Netflix, right? You get Netflix-type streaming access directly through your Verizon cable box.
Right. But it sounds like it's probably going to be more along the lines of movies than TV shows, since that's more of what Redbox does. So, and All Things D is suggesting that they might try and bundle this in with some maybe free Redbox disc rentals to sweeten the deal away from those Netflix subscribers.
True. It's a closed alpha for now, but we will keep you informed of any wider developments with that, especially if you have Verizon, Fios, or even DSL, I guess, would probably be okay. Now, Facebook is launching a new feature called the Recommendations Bar, which I've read through this article two or three times, and it's definitely written for developers. I don't really understand what its function is for the end user. Basically, they are trying to recommend things for you to like, which just seems like pushing marketing on the end user, which I don't like it. This is a show for the end user, and it will affect you because you, let's face it, we all use Facebook. So you'll definitely see it. And my advice, ignore it.
Yes. I'm a developer and I'm with you. I still didn't really understand this article. Maybe that's because I'm not a huge fan of Facebook, though.
I think it's definitely aimed at Facebook developers, which I don't know any of them.
Nope, me neither.
All right. So Roku is continuing to climb the ranks. I know Chris is a big fan of Roku. Josh, do you have a Roku? Have you ever used it?
I don't have one, but I've used
it. Yeah, have you ever played Angry Birds for Roku? It's
no.
Pretty fun. You can use the remote as like a slingshot whip.
I don't find Angry Birds fun on my phone, so I'm not sure that I'd find it very fun on a Roku.
It's a whole different platform. Anyway, they've just closed a whole round of $45 million of funding, getting money from News Corp, British Sky Broadcasting, and some other big investors. They are positioning themselves to become the streaming box of pay TV.
Well, and they're doing a pretty good job with it. Whenever anyone asks me, I want a cheap streaming box, what should I get? If they're not already tied into the Apple ecosystem, I recommend a Roku. It does everything.
True. At one point, I was recommending a Vudu box, but Roku, I think, has surpassed them, especially if you already have Netflix.
Right. Okay, Taylor, so I'm getting a little motion sick here. Why don't we turn off the afterburners?
Okay, we can turn off the afterburners, but before we do, I just got to mention that just like I predicted last week and 2 weeks ago, Apple's OS 10.8 Mountain Lion released yesterday on July 25th, as of this recording, 1 day after their quarterly earnings results conference call. Now let's turn off the afterburners and I'll give you a little bit more of the details on the new Apple releases. Josh, how you doing? Are you okay?
I think I'm all okay. Right. I think I made it through the afterburners.
Is your drink intact?
It still is, okay. Fortunately. I didn't spill any.
That's good. All right, so Mountain Lion was released to much fanfare. David Pogue in the New York Times wrote, "Should you get it? I don't know, but it's $20, so probably."
You can't argue with that logic.
I'm paraphrasing, of course. But even if you don't want to get Apple's new operating system, you can update Safari, either for Mac or Windows, to Safari 6. It comes with a number of cool new features, ways to share, ways to sync your tabs with iPhones and iPads and other Safari computers. They've also released iWork updates to support the new operating system and also the new MacBook with Retina display. And finally, they've announced OS X Mountain Lion Server Edition, which is also $20. Although it was $49 last time around, the difference between Snow Leopard Server and Lion Server, by the way, was huge. And I think they are really remarketing their servers towards high-level end-user consumers, you know, as opposed to sysadmins, especially with the new Mac Mini, well, not new anymore, but Mac Mini Server Edition.
So maybe people who are doing a lot of like high-end video editing and things like that at home?
Yeah, sure. Although the Mac Pro is probably better, still a better feature for that. Not necessarily somebody who wants concentrated firepower in one device, but you know, somebody who's managing a lot of personal devices. There's a lot of really great device management features built into Lion and Mountain Lion Server Edition that you won't really find anywhere else.
Okay. I had completely forgotten that OS X Server even existed.
Yeah, most people did by the time Snow Leopard rolled around. But there was a small uproar when Lion Server Edition came out because it really brought Apple's server software back to form and function. So most people still aren't going to use it. Definitely a small market, but Apple has really brought out the big development guns when it comes to like small personal sysadmin type stuff, you know, on both okay. on both iOS and OS X.
Okay. Well, the next computer I have used, because I own one of these, well, I've never used an OS X server. I've used something significantly smaller, and that would be the Raspberry Pi. This is a cool story here. You know, with the Raspberry Pi, it's all about just doing fun things and neat things that other people haven't thought of with this little $35 ARM-based computer. This person put together a real-time a translation subtitle system using a couple of Raspberry Pis, some 3D glasses, a smartphone, and some cables, and was able to talk to a woman speaking Spanish and have her Spanish words translated into English and put as subtitles on his glasses. That's amazing.
Yeah, I could not believe the story when I saw it. The fact that, you know, Google is trying to basically do this same thing, you know, build a tiny computer into some 3D glasses with Google Glasses. And they're talking about bringing it out in 1 to 2 years for $1,500 or more. And here, this guy took a $35 microcomputer and some $200 glasses and just sort of made it happen. It works between English and Spanish and English. And I would imagine you could add a whole bunch of other languages just using the same interfaces that we've already seen happen in other translation services.
Yeah, this would be cool, although it's probably a little much to be carrying with you on your trip abroad.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. definitely for now. Maybe a smartphone would suit you better in those particular cases. But still, great first step. And, you know, it's something that you could make yourself for not a lot of money.
Exactly.
All right. I got Verizon Fios this week.
I'm very jealous already.
Yeah, 75 megabits per second. I am forced to use their single band router. So that's not very fun. My time capsule is just sitting there, a wasting space. Well, I gotta be honest, the speed is great. And I used to have RCN cable and internet, and the cable boxes for Fios are much better. And even better, those cable boxes, the DVR, we're going to fill it up pretty quickly already, I can tell. But you can plug an external drive in. As much as, I think, 3 terabytes is the limit.
You know, DVRs are something that I know a lot about, but I didn't know that you could do that with the Fios DVR. That's a pretty nice
feature. Yeah, I have friends who have had Fios, and it must be fairly new because they all complain that they can't do it. But my set-top box definitely has that feature.
That's right? Great.
Now, it has to be an eSATA connection. I guess otherwise it might not be fast enough, and they don't have USB 3.0 or anything. So it has to be eSATA. So I have to maybe go out and get an eSATA drive. But yeah, I'm pretty happy about it.
So you're upgrading from cable. How fast was your connection with cable?
It was about a 15 megabits per second.
And now it's 75.
Now it's 75.
How much do
35.
You notice? How much do you notice that downspeed difference?
I definitely notice it. It's significant. I downloaded 2 gigabytes of Apple updates the other day, and it took me less than 5 minutes wirelessly.
That's impressive. What I'm most jealous of is the upload speed for things like doing podcasts. It'd be nice to have a lot more up bandwidth.
Yeah, you know, it's been pretty amazing to me. Today, just recording this podcast, I haven't noticed any glitchiness on my end at all.
No, you've sounded really good.
You sound good too. I bet you're probably wired, right?
Don't tell anybody, but I'm doing this wireless.
Oh, really? Chris always yells at me, but I bet he's not going to yell anymore.
Well, he probably should still yell at me. Richard yells at me. In fact, he's yelling in the chat at me right now. That might cause him to break his vow of silence just to come back on here.
He may, yes. Something tells me he's going to break his vow of silence by next week. You may be off the hook. I don't know. But I'll tell you that there are a couple of things with Verizon Fios that have really been bothering me. The first thing that I noticed was I was so excited after coming from a small ISP to have apps on my phone for controlling my TV and my DVR. And I went on, as soon as they set up Fios, I went right to the App Store and I found 7 Fios-specific apps. And I did
7?
And I downloaded every single one. And 6 of them were completely inapplicable to me, even though I have triple play, even though I have cable, internet, and voice. 6 of them were useless.
Well, what did those 6 apps do? How could they possibly be useless when you have everything they offer?
So one was directed towards people who have home automation. I guess there's an extra service feature that you have to pay more for, where you can control lights and thermostat and then security cameras through your Fios
yes.
setup.
Yeah, I'd forgotten right. about that. That would be a nice feature.
Another one was an NFL premium package only app.
Okay.
Another one was basically just an app that brought you to other Fios apps, and that was it.
Not very useful there.
Yeah. And then the other ones were kind of Fios branded internet things. Like they had a concierge app that supposedly like you can order food online and it'll be delivered to you, but nobody uses it. Restaurants don't use it. It's not going to work.
Okay. So what was the one app that did work?
The one app that was supposed to work was the cable box remote app. It's supposed to work exactly like your regular DVR remote, but it didn't. Uh-huh. It either disconnected or it crashed or it controlled the wrong volume. I still have, days later, I've not been able to set any recordings remotely, which I used to be able to do on Comcast all the time. So when it comes to battle of the cable provider iOS apps, I'm going to say right now, Comcast is winning, hands down.
Well, but I would bet that you're willing to take that loss for the higher speeds of your internet.
Well, I don't know. Apparently, Comcast has higher internet speeds now, too.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
But I'm happy to be away from Comcast otherwise. But that's not my only problem with Fios. I did already mention that they only have a single band router. I mean, it's a brand new router. They advertised it just came out like 2 months ago, but it still can't do dual band. It can't do a 2.4 gigahertz and a 5 gigahertz. I have to pick between the two. And there's actually, I don't think I even have a 5 gigahertz option.
Oh, That's not cool.
I might, but I'm afraid to use it because it's very unstable.
Yeah, and it might break everything else.
Furthermore, I have people in my house who are very insistent on using their ISP-branded email. So they want Verizon.net email addresses. Now, you know, this is an advertised part of the package. You pay for the internet, you get up to 10 email addresses. Here's the thing, though. They're POP3, and they are not compatible with any Apple product.
Oh,
so there's no IMAP. Even if you could get it working, it only works on one device. And so far, I have not gotten it working on any Apple device, and I've tried about 5.
Huh. I would think that you'd still be able to set up POP3 somehow.
You would think. But... And I called them today, and I was on the phone for an hour, having them tell me things that I already knew.
That's unfortunate. Time to get them all to switch to Gmail.
Yeah, they all have Gmail, but they don't like it. Maybe Sparrow.
I bet they would like it more than non-functioning POP3 email.
But, you know, it is quite fast. It's decent speed and cable for the price. It's actually cheaper than our previous cable package. And at least they have all the channels for cable, unlike Google Fiber TV.
Very true.
So that's basically my first impressions of Fios. It's good, and it's awesome. First world problem.
Well, yeah, we're still all very jealous of you. Those of us who aren't in Fios areas, still very jealous of you, even if you have a few little problems there.
Right. Well, I'm jealous of people in Kansas City, people with faster Fios speeds than me, people with faster Comcast speeds than me.
Well, but if that 300 megabits from Fios actually is 120% of that 300 megs, it's probably fast.
Then you're talking about 360 megabits per second. Right. That is pretty fast. You know who else I'm jealous of is the people who have all those premium packages that they get to use all the apps that didn't work for me. Who are these people with Fios-enabled webcams?
Those are the cool people.
Yeah, I want some of that. I want to get in on that.
It'll only cost you another $10, $15 a month, plus the camera and all of that.
Yeah, okay. I'm all of a sudden very less interested. Well, our kicker this week is another thing that you can make for yourself for not a lot of money. But first, we're going to turn to our tip of the week for a second, which is this great little story. Now, Josh, I don't know about you, but I am getting tired of people talking about using their iPads as a second monitor for their laptop. They are just so proud of it. It's not that special anymore. but mainly, I'm just really jealous that they can do it because it's pretty awesome. It's not new,
it is pretty awesome.
But now, if you are a Kindle owner who is jealous like I am of all those iPad owners, we have a tip for you this week that will let you turn your Kindle into a second monitor for your computer.
And this is the e-ink Kindle.
Yeah, that's right.
That's really mind-blowing. I mean, I think it's cool just to have your secondary monitor be this black and whitish color. That'd be kind of retro.
Right. Obviously, it's not going to work for a lot of different features. You know, you can't watch any video on there. Although they're showing video in this screenshot on the Kindle, which is a little bit silly. So I guess you could watch video. It just wouldn't look very good. You know, you couldn't really see color pictures. But there are a lot of things where you want to just see on your computer. You know, you just want to get a little update on there. And the Kindle has a great screen. You know, there's no glare. There's no eye strain. You know, you can just, in ambient light, you can just look at it. And it'll just kind of fill you in. And so this is a great way to get a little bit more use out of your Kindle, especially if you have an older Kindle. That's all it is. If you have a Kindle, take our tip. Run with it.
But not too far, because it's got to be plugged into your computer.
Right. And finally, for our kicker, this one comes from CNET and MakerBot. Now, MakerBot, the Brooklyn-based company that makes a 3D printer that is one of the cheapest on the market and also releases free open source diagrams and codes for just about everything that they build, they have made a 3D printable analog cassette tape MP3 player.
Yeah, this looks pretty awesome. So it's the size of a cassette tape and looks like a cassette tape, but it has the electronics in it of a small MP3 player that you can put 2 gigs of music on, and you sync it and charge it with a USB cable, and then you can just carry this tape around with your headphones plugged into it and listen to your music like that. It'd be pretty stylish, right? At least in San Francisco.
Right, it totally would. They used to make these that actually fit into a cassette player, and you could either plug headphones into it, or you could put it into a cassette player, you know, like in your car or something, and play it that way.
Yeah, that you had mentioned that to me earlier, and that's, I had never heard of those. Like the cassette adapters were always the best way to get the music from your MP3 player into your car stereo, but I had never known that they made cassette adapter MP3 players. That's actually kind of brilliant.
They totally did, yeah. I don't know if they actually make those anymore, but you can at least get the hipster version. But then you could say that you made it yourself. Or if you don't have a MakerBot printer, you can get one for $39 and then pretend that you made it yourself. And I think those old ones, they only had like 64 megabytes or 128 megabytes in them, and almost no battery life. The new one has 2 gigabytes. So, you know.
And it'll last you 4 hours.
Right. So, and you could at least get 4 hours of music out of that 4 hours of charge.
Not bad for $39.
Right. Anyway, that was our kicker, and that's usually the end of our show. Well, thanks everyone for listening to the show. You can find more information in the show notes at thedigitalmediazone.com. Just go to the website and then click on the podcast tab and go down to the end user. That's THENDUSR. The Digital Media Zone has a few other podcasts, most notably Josh's. Josh, your podcast is, 20 Entertainment Zones?
Something like that. More like Entertainment 2.0.
Entertainment 2.0. That's way catchier.
A little bit catchier, although I kind of like 20 Entertainments a little more.
All right, well.
But yeah, we discuss the latest Microsoft Entertainment technology news, and of course with a focus on Windows Media Center. So we love all of that TV technology.
Yeah, and you've had some great guest hosts recently as well, haven't you?
Indeed. We just last week had Dave McCabe, who's a Windows Home Server MVP, talking about the death of Home Server and what that means. The week before, we had an industry expert, Derek Flickinger, talking about all of the latest news that's happened and what that could look like going forward. So we've had a lot of great guests recently, and a lot of, you know, Microsoft is keeping us busy with lots of news this year as we prepare for Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8.
That is really awesome. I can't wait to see what else happens. We've also got a couple more podcasts at thedigitalmediazone.com. Check out Scene in HD and the Movie Podcast. And you can send us some feedback at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com or by following us on Twitter. Together, we are at the end user, THENDUSR. I am at TaylorPhone. Chris is at Chris Hale Barnes, and that's probably the only way to talk to him during his vow of silence.
Probably. Yeah.
Josh, are you on Twitter too?
I am on Twitter constantly. I'm at Josh Pollard. I make it really easy.
Yes, you do. I am your host and producer, Taylor Marr. Chris Barnes will be back whenever he decides to start speaking again. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.